I have so many questions when it comes to the selection. What about you, Heather?
Some of our podcast listeners have also sent in questions to us.
Yeah, it's quite good. So anyway, this is Welcome to Voter Talk Question Time podcast, episode number 10, where we answer the questions that have been sent in from the audience.
I'm Heather Roy.
And I'm Simon Ewing Jarvie. Welcome to Voter Talk. Mr. Speaker! And that is the question we're starting with. That we haven't actually mentioned the speaker. We've got a voter from Titai Tokoro. He has said we haven't actually mentioned the speaker in any of our podcasts. So what's their role? How are they selected or elected? Is it part of the election process that voters can be engaged in, etc.? The big chair up the front with the white sheepskin on. Heather, tell us all about it.
That's right. So the speaker is an elected MP, but the public don't actually select the speaker for Parliament for the next 3 years. Once the results are in and Parliament reconvenes, one of the first things that happens is the Speaker is elected by the 120 MPs of the new Parliament.
Right.
It's usually somebody from a senior MP from the government side, but it doesn't have to be. There was one recent example where that wasn't the case. But the Speaker's role is essentially to run Parliament.
Right, so they're like the chairman of the meeting.
They are. They have several aspects to their job. The most visible one is that in Parliament, when the Speaker is basically the referee at question time, he or she runs the proceedings, they're part of all of the parliamentary debate, including the passing of all the legislation, and they also have an administrative role. They welcome international visitors to Parliament, and they also are responsible for all the committees that run Parliament itself, the behind-the-scenes running of Parliament.
Right, so they're sort of running parliamentary services behind the scenes as well?
Yeah, they're the leader of those. Chief executive, if you like.
Right, when someone's selected at the start of a Parliament, they often appear quite reluctant to go up the front and leave their chair, and one of their colleagues seems to take them by the arm
and drag them forward.
What's the history of that?
That's a traditional thing.
I think it was also the reluctance was about they were the one that used to be the conduit for decisions of the Parliament to the Crown, and off with your head might have been the result if you took the wrong message.
Yeah. It wasn't a popular role in those days.
Righty-ho, who have we got? We've got a voter from New Plymouth.
Yes, and he has asked, is Parliament better off having a couple of big parties and just a few smaller parties, or should voters be really worried that some of our minor parties might not be back in Parliament after this particular election? That's a very good question, and one that we addressed a little bit as part of our discussion about MMP. What do you think, Simon?
Well, I think they're right to be worried that some of the minor parties may not be back, or minor parties struggle to get in. And a whole lot of things lead us to look back in history. When we had first past the post, we had national...
Essentially two big parties.
Two big parties. Mm. And a crazy system. Oh, Social Credit got a couple of seats at one point, but... Crazy system where, you know, someone could win all the electorates. There was no party vote back then. It was just a single tick. And so you were often stuck with a minority government for years and years and years. That's hardly
right.
Democracy.
And it was, no, and it was very much, it's our turn now and your turn next. Whereas the MMP environment has brought, as we've talked already about in other podcasts, much better representation. And the reason I like MMP is because it really does become a contest of ideas. You get the smaller parties bring ideas that the big parties often don't think about on the periphery.
Yeah. And I remember Richard Preble, I asked him one day why he joined Labour. You know, this is when he was leading ACT. Mm-hmm. And I asked him why he entered politics in Labour, and he said in his day you only had the two choices, National and Labour, basically, unless you were, you know, in the fringe and never getting in. And he said National stood for conservatism, basically the status quo, keeping everything the same. So if you had ideas that you wanted to implement, Labour was your only path, and that's how he travelled into politics.
And that's still largely true. When you see, look at, even under MMP, Labour-led governments and National-led governments, National doesn't often reverse the changes that have been made, and it tends to be the Labour governments, and the recent Labour governments, that have signalled change, and the best example of that, of course, is the 1984 change from Muldoon to Longy, Preble and Douglas.
Mm, right. What have we got next?
The next question is from a Christchurch voter, and she's asked, why do media focus so much on polling? Polls, to my mind, she says, suggest to voters who they should vote for. It brings into question the wasted vote and completely ignores policy, which she believes is the only thing people should be voting for.
Well, she's absolutely right on the last bit, but unfortunately, for a variety of reasons, a lot of people don't spend a lot of time researching. We've developed this presidential style, TV style campaign in New Zealand, where you're just looking at the two leaders and popularity stakes, which I think have absolutely, you know, no place in the decision making for voters.
Yeah. I think this question is actually much more about the influence that the polls might have on people.
Yeah, true.
And I think that the polls do influence the way in which people vote. It does talk to the wasted vote that we talked about in the previous podcast. I think that when voters see that the minor parties particularly are perhaps going to struggle to get to 5%, they will change their mind to voting for a party that they might feel a lot of alignment with, to one of the bigger parties, so that their side, if you like, is the one that's elected, rather than the party that they really want. So I think the polls do have the danger of being quite influential on and moving people away, veering them away from a party that they would rather vote for.
Yeah, the reporting is snapshot reporting, very little in the way of trend reporting, and most people haven't done a statistics paper since, you know, maybe a little bit at school.
That's right. So if you're going to pay any attention to any polls, I think it is much better to look at the poll of polls and average them out. But my advice would be, and this is advice from that I've been giving for a very long time now, is vote for the party that you really believe in so that we get true representation in our parliament.
Yeah, there's another couple of things I just want to add to that, somewhat cynically but true, of online sites, is if something's free, it means you're the product. And so if you go to a website that is offering free news, for instance, and that means that someone else is paying for it, and that someone else is an advertiser. Their job is to keep you on that website for as long as possible, clicking on as many links as possible, and the sensationalism that builds around polling helps them do that. Now, my right honourable colleague to the left.
Well, thank you very much for the promotion, but it's completely unfounded. As a minister in a government, I have the title of honourable, but not right honourable.
Well, we've got a voter from Epsom who's confused. What's the difference?
There is quite a lot of confusion about that. People aren't quite sure which to use. The difference is, on the people who have honourable as their title, people who have been ministers in a government, or they are judges from the High Court, the Appeals Court, and the Supreme Court.
Right. It all sort of changed about 2010. But before that, if you were a right honourable, you were a member of the Privy Council. We've got our own Supreme Court now. It was going to be written out of the script, and it was actually the Queen that wrote to the Prime Minister and said, well, you know, I'd like to keep this Right Honourable title, but
that's
only
right
for key positions. So it's the Governor-General, the Speaker,
the Prime Minister
and the Chief Justice.
That's right. So those people now are Right Honourables. You have to have had those jobs to hold that title. So our current Prime Minister is the Right Honourable.
They keep that for life, eh?
They do keep that for life. Those people who have honourable don't necessarily keep that for life. That can be taken from you. But at the recommendation of the Prime Minister to the Governor-General, when you leave Parliament, that allows you to continue using the title.
Right. Great. So when they're talking about my honourable friend or my honourable member, that's nothing, actually.
Not a title. Hmm. It's being used as a politeness, yes. And a lot of that information can be found on another very good website that we haven't talked about to date, and that's the Parliament website. So if you go to parliament.nz, you'll find all sorts of things. It talks a bit about the history and the honourable versus right honourable issue is there, but it also talks about what happens in Parliament, and you can go to select committees, you can see the legislation winding its way through the House. Great place to go if you want to just trawl through and see all the things that do happen. Hmm. And you'll be surprised at the breadth of some of the things. The public don't have visibility of a lot of those.
Heather, it's your turn for a political quote.
Yes, it is my turn for a political quote. Mine today is a quote from John Adams, and it sums up really, I think, really well the civics type issues that our podcasts have focused on to date. So the quote is this: government is instituted for the common good, for the protection, the safety, prosperity, and happiness of the people, and not for the profit, honour, or private interest of any one man, family, or class of men.
I'd argue with that. Okay, well, that's it from us today. If you would like to send us your questions to cover in future podcasts, please get onto the contacts page at our website, talkpoint.co.nz. That's TORQUE point. And you can also find us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, and so on. I'm Simon Ewing-Jarvie.
And I'm Heather Roy.
Talk to you later.